Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares opened weaker today following overnight losses in Europe. In early trade, the Straits Times Index was down 0.1% to 3,143 points after some 33 million securities changed hands in the broader market. Closing numbers are still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen. As we told you earlier, the Straits Times Index was back in the green in the afternoon already, and right now it is up 0.63% at 3,164 points. In terms of value turnover, we are looking at 1.4 billion Sing dollars. The gainers outnumbered losers, 271 versus 268. Top five movers by value, we've got here DBS, UOB, Singtel, OCBC, and Yangtze Jiang Shipbuilding Sing dollars. Heavily traded securities, Oceanus, Seatrium and Life Brands. Now, in terms of companies to watch for today, we do have City Developments Limited. Its associate company, City View Place, sold 65 units at the residences at W Sentosa Cove, Singapore in a week. And that is even more than the 58 units put on the market on the 9th of April. Then meanwhile, from a deeper look at Singapore's key export numbers to earnings from chip-making equipment manufacturer ASML, we've got more local and international headlines in focus. Joining me as always on the line is Toby Gresham, investment counsellor team lead at City Private Bank. Toby, welcome.
Hi, Tian Tian. Great to be on.
Great to have you on board. And Toby, let's start with the U.S. this time round. Fed Chair Jerome Powell, he spoke in Washington, warning that recent data have clearly not given the central bank greater confidence when it comes to lowering inflation and lowering interest rates as well. And he added that it is appropriate to give the current restrictive policy further time to work and let the data lead the officials. When do you think we can see the first rate cut then? Would it be a hike this year?
Yeah, I mean, look, just a month ago, we were looking at something like seven cuts being priced in, and that's changed very quickly to one or two cuts, with the market a lot more sort of hawkish. I think part of the challenge is the most recent CPI inflation data, and then this week the retail numbers have been really, really strong, surprisingly so. And so as a result, we now hear from Powell he's going to be forced to be much more data dependent, that until we know inflation's heading down towards 2%, he's likely going to keep things on hold. To be clear, this is a delay in cutting, not any sort of big change in stance. But it's never that simple, because we've got an election this year. And once we get past the July meeting, the next two meetings are going to bookend the election itself. So potentially you could see a cut in mid-September, just as the two candidates are fighting it out. But the next one in November is 2 days after the electoral result. So if they don't cut in July, we might not see until December that the first cut come through. Just to be clear on what the market believes, the market's now got the 10-year U.S. Treasury at 4.65%. So it thinks things are going to be pushed to the back end of the year.
That being said, as much as we want to spur economic growth in the U.S., the economy is holding up quite well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, considerably well. I mean, if we look at the data that we've seen come through, GDP has gradually been ticked up throughout the year. And if we also look at the current earnings season we've got coming through, one of the key indicators Citi looks at is the CEO Confidence Index, which in Q1 was up 11%. So in our view, when we look at these earnings that are coming out right now, we've had the banks first, we see earnings surprise up of 6%. So, you know, as a result, from our perspective, the economy is very robust.
I see. Now let's turn our attention, Toby, now to take a look at the Singapore stock market as usual. How has the SDI fared so far today? Any surprises when it comes to the biggest movers, say your Keppel Pacific, Oak US REIT? Distributable income, I believe, for the first quarter ended much, fell 8.8% on the year. Any thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, the stock market, Singapore's up about 0.5% today, as you shared. China's sort of broadly leading the way in Asia. I would say sort of Asia is setting its own tone here. There's been very little follow through from some of the jitters that we've seen on the geopolitical side coming out of the US. One thing I'd say about what's going on the winners and losers, banks are up, REITs are down. And, you know, I talked to you earlier about Treasury being up at 4.65% on the U.S. Singapore government bonds have rallied from 2.7% at the start of the year. The 10-year Singapore government bond is now at 3.4%. So that is a huge move. Now, higher rates, good for the banks. When rates are high, the economy is robust, and you know that's good for them to make money against their deposits. Bad for real estate. Real estate's paying yields that when we see the risk-free rate move up, to make those yields more attractive, they've got to go up. And so the value of those REITs are going down. So when we look at the red today in Singapore, it's predominantly the REIT names. And so I'm not surprised to hear that, you know, the likes of Keppel, that was a little bit stock specific, but hearing Keppel Pacific Oak was down, I'm not too surprised on that.
And zooming in on some of the other companies to watch, we've got a developer here, City Developments Limited, CDL. Its associate company, City View Place, sold 65 units at the residences at W Sentosa Cove, Singapore, in a week, which is more than what they put up on the market on the 9th of April. If we look at average selling price, I believe it's $1,780 per square foot. What does it say about the appetite for private housing here in Singapore? Is it just mainly company specific?
Yeah, I mean, look, the March home sales just have came out recently, and there was over 700 units sold. And to put that in context, that's about that's more than the prior 3 months that we've seen. So based on that, you would think, you know, that's a huge positive. You know, our city research guys highlighted, though, that this is predominantly a one-off. These big spikes we see relate to more desirable developments come online. And, you know, it won't be lost on any of us driving home or looking out the window right now. There are more and more cranes and condos going up. So that hot market we saw last year, there is more supply coming into it. We couple that with higher rates to borrow. I mean, we talked about the 10-year Sing bond rallying up through 3.4. So it costs more to borrow to buy these places. And at the same time, we've also got punitive measures for foreign buyers. So from our perspective, you know, this is a unique scenario for Singapore. If we look out to the rest of the world, you know, it relies on foreign demand. US and UK have been more resilient, and we've actually seen pockets of hot demand in the more desirable locations in some of their key cities.
Right, I see. If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Toby Gresham, investment counselor, team lead at City Private Bank. Now let's stay in Singapore, Toby, and take a look at the country's non-oil domestic exports, or key export numbers, basically. Nordex shrank 20.7% in March from a high base a year ago. Both electronics and non-electronic shipments slumped. But I believe the sharp drop we're looking at, 20% over, has to do with steep declines in the volatile pharmaceutical segments and the export of ships and boat structures. So how should we be reading into the numbers then?
Yeah, so I mean, this drop was more than the market expected. So it did come as a shock. I mean, the market would think it was expecting about 7% down. So the figure of 20 was a bit of a shock. To put it in context, it's, I think, the worst number we've seen since Jan 2023. And, you know, I think the main sort of factor behind this is we're seeing the high value add items in the exports are struggling. Pharma is less of a concern to us. Yes, that was down 70%, but it's snapping a 5-month winning streak.
Yeah.
And it is always quite a volatile segment. The bigger concern reading into the numbers is the electronic slowdown. Singapore, you know, especially in the integrated circuit space, wants to compete with South Korea and Taiwan. In fact, that they're struggling to compete with these higher-end processing AI memory chips. And it's that demand that is differentiating South Korea and Taiwan from Singapore in these numbers.
Don't mind me asking this, Toby. What do you think are the reasons, perhaps, as you mentioned, if it turns out to be really lagging behind South Korea and Taiwan?
Look, I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, when we look at the AI market or the chip market, there is a lot of demand that is coming through, and there are a lot of stars that are aligning there. But I think one of the big trends that we're seeing running through markets is the growth of data centers. And we are beginning to see a sort of differentiation in terms of price and value for these higher-end processing chips. They're called ASIC chips. That is getting a greater premium, has stronger demand relative to the broader hardware or broader lower-end market. So I think the differentiator is that there are very few skilled countries and companies that can produce these chips. The U.S. has been controlling who can sell them and to whom. And at the moment, that competitive advantage does absolutely sit with Taiwan and South Korea.
I see. Now, since you mentioned about chips, let's take a look at Dutch tech giant ASML, which is a maker of chip-making equipment. Now, it reported a drop in net profit and orders amid tensions between China and the West. Notably, when we look at bookings, it slumped to 3.6 billion euros from 9.2 billion euros reported in the fourth quarter. Do you think such declines are homogeneous across equipment makers, or is it specific to ASML?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, when you look at the different chip producers, there is a lot of range and diversity across and the margins across what is being produced. Funnily enough, I mean, when I mentioned the stars were aligned, we are now seeing a lot of tailwinds in this sector. I mean, we've talked about, and I think markets very much aware around what's happening with the high-end AI chips. But if you look at mobile, if you look at auto and also PC, all of those broadly, that market troughed in 2023. And so we are seeing that move up. ASML had some disappointing headline news, which is why we saw that sell down. So it's quite isolated. In actual fact, they had record previous orders this year, and they themselves have said in their outlook that demand's going to be very back-ended. So if we look at trading right now on the screen, I can see, actually, we've seen ASML sort of rallying back despite that drop on its initial open. So, I mean, I think once the market sort of digests, there's a bit of a timing here. The broad sector is positive. If we look at the ETF that tracks semiconductors in the U.S., the SOX ETF, that has had a very strong start to the year. And so that broadening out trade, initially having seen NVIDIA and these large cap, mega cap tech stocks, TSMC, drive up this market, we're now seeing these second tier players begin to move up as the rally takes sort of broadens out and takes a bit more control.
I see. Now, before we let you go, Toby, I do want to take a look at this piece of news on Morgan Stanley. It is reportedly planning to start cutting about 50 investment banking jobs in APAC this week, at least 80% of those reductions in Hong Kong and China. And if we look at earnings out yesterday, global results topped forecasts. So do you think financial institutions in general are taking a preemptive move? And if so, what does it say about the appeal of APAC and Greater China region?
Look, I think there's two things to unpick here. I mean, one of them is really sort of thinking about the rude health of the banks. And you know, the first few large cap banks that have reported in this earnings season, credit quality has been incredibly high. We've seen them retiring provisioning. We've seen loan officers now sort of loosening up their grip and beginning to issue more loans. And, you know, the credit spreads have tightened such that there's been some record bond issuance coming through. Even if you look at some of the investment banking results, they've been improving from a very low base. So, I mean, if we think about the sector, we do think M&A has troughed. We can see it more positive, which brings me to the second point. I think there's a bit of regional differentiation here. Typically, in a recovery cycle, you see the U.S. and London and some of the more established markets recover in the M&A side. Asia-Pac has had the worst. If we think about the M&A and IPO market in China, in Singapore, in Hong Kong, it's done very badly. So I think there's a bit of cost control going on. But I am aware that, you know, certain institutions out there have been quite aggressive in building out and hiring bankers, especially with Credit Suisse's demise. So, you know, I think this is quite an isolated number. APAC will be slower to recover, but we're still positive that we'll see M&A recover following the lead that we're already seeing from London and New York.
Right, I see. And let's keep our eyes on that in the coming weeks and months. Thanks a lot, Toby. That was Toby Gresham, Investment Counselor Team Lead at Citi Private Bank. Thank you very much, as always, for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Thanks, TNTM.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.